Welcome to the Financial Power Hour with the financial prosperity coach, Christopher Music, who has been a featured guest on CBS, NBC, ABC, and Fox affiliates, sharing his 20-plus years of experience in financial principles and how to apply them to your life and business. And now, your host, Christopher Music.
Well, hi, everyone. This is Christopher Music, your host for the Financial Power Hour here on AM 1380, The Biz. You know, I created this program called the Private Practice Millionaire, and it's a program, educational and financial planning program, specifically for private practice professionals. You know, you licensed people out there who have your own practice for whatever reason you decided to go into business for yourself. I have created a network of experts that will help you have a wonderful financial experience while you are pursuing your passion. And that's what this show really focuses on. Now, of course, these principles are applicable to everyone, but I have it in my heart for the small business person. You're the one that makes America run. And if there's anything that you need is real, genuine help in this area to make a go of it with all of these factors that are creating such a difficult time for all of us. You know, I put this show together to help you achieve what I call financial power. And that is a very specific state of affairs. You know, it's having your household completely debt-free. It is having your business booming, really affluent with a transition plan that you can turn over that value to somebody else on your terms and on your timetable. It is having a guaranteed income stream that can pay you the rest of your life like your own pension plan. It is about having all your assets protected and, of course, time freed up so that you can put your attention on other things besides making a living to create a better quality of life. And that's what this definition of financial power is. And it is achievable factually for every one of you that's listening. It's just a matter of learning these simple basic laws and personal finance that really have always been true since the ancient Sumerians and Babylons up to present day. We just are not applying them because we are so inundated with information that is just flat out wrong. And we try to follow it and we can't figure out why, you know, we're having all this trouble, all this effort for not a lot to show for it. Well, that's what this show is all about, is to bring you resources and wisdom so that you can make better decisions in your financial life to be able to enjoy this condition I call financial power. Now, my special guest today is an absolute rock star. This guy's cool. He is a tax expert, which, of course, is two words that kind of go together. It's really difficult to get our wits around. But his name is Paul Dyer, and he is founder of United Cloud Partners, which we're going to call the Tax Cloud for our vernacular today. And he's going to be talking about easy ways to save thousands of dollars on your tax bill. So I want you to listen to this entire show today because we're going to have some really cool tax strategies to share with you that you may or may not know about, or your accountant may or may not be talking to you about. So these are really important strategies to basically retain value in our household. You know, why do we have to do tax planning? First of all, we have to realize that, you know, I talk to professionals all day long. And she said, well, my accountant, you know, does my returns. But I'm paying a lot in taxes. Yeah, I think everybody can say, well, I paid too much in taxes. All right, well, that's all well and good. But what strategies are you implementing to reduce your taxes, not only this year, but in 3 to 5 years from now? You see, I think we don't understand that there are different types of accountants. There are tax preparation accountants. And these are the people that you give them all your financials, and they give you a return that is compliant with the Internal Revenue Code. That's their job. Was their job to minimize your taxes? No, it was to prepare those taxes. Now that's a very big difference from an accountant who was a tax planner and preparer. A tax planner is going to be looking at your financial condition and your businesses and your income streams and expenses and say, you know what? There's some strategies that we can look at implementing here that if we did this, we could reduce our taxes $5,000, $10,000 or more a year just by simply setting up a separate company or by using a different kind of account or doing our transactions within compliance of the code in a more efficient way. That's tax planning. And I found that not a lot of accountants do tax planning. They do tax preparation. And I think you may be experiencing that in your own tax life. So this is about the importance of tax planning. Look, guys, if you're a productive professional, you're going to pay tax. The only question is, how much are you going to pay? That is within your cause. It's your domain, your prerogative to determine how much you are going to pay. And the more you confront taxes, something that's with us like oxygen, the better you're going to have the reward for keeping that money in your own household. So we're going to be talking to Paul today about some strategies, about some viewpoints on taxes that as a professional, I think it's very important that you take. As a small business owner, even as a citizen of the U.S., you know that if you have a dollar in taxes you saved, you can create more social good with that dollar than the government can. You know this. So it is an ethical, moral, and virtuous right, an obligation that we have to minimize our taxes so that we can contribute to those causes and purposes that create better conditions for all of us. So this tax discussion is something that is integral to your success as a business owner and as a professional or even a citizen of this great country. So before we hear from Paul, we're going to take a quick break. And we're going to be talking to my tax management expert, Paul Dyer, and he's going to be giving you his insight and expertise on how to better manage your tax bill with ease and save thousands. You will not want to miss this. We will be right back. Hi, this is Christopher Music, host of the Financial Power Hour and creator of the Private Practice Millionaire. I'm a veteran financial expert, best-selling author, and the founder of the subject of Econologics, which is a results-based financial planning system. After almost 20 years as a practicing financial advisor, I discovered that the missing ingredient in the prosperity of any household is the education and implementation of universally workable strategies. There are correct, time-tested laws that have always worked, and I want to share them with you. In 2013, I penned a chapter in the best-selling book, More Better, The World's Leading Experts Reveal How to Get More Out of Business and Life with Better Results. This chapter, called The 10 Maxims of the Private Practice Millionaire, is a summary of the most important actions to take to ensure success in private practice. Download the book free at www.pchristophermusic.com. That's www.pchristophermusic.com.
Welcome back to the Financial Power Hour with Christopher Music, online at pchristophermusic.com.
All right, welcome back, everyone. This is Christopher Music, your host, and you're listening to the Financial Power Hour here on AM 1380, The Biz. Now, before the break, I talked about how really ethical, moral it was to keep our taxes to a minimum. And so I'm going to introduce my next expert here. His name is Mr. Paul Dyer. And back in the 80s and 90s, he founded several successful financial planning firms as a financial advisor. He was licensed, you know, all the different licenses, of course, and he still holds a Series 65 license today, which is an investment advisory license. During that time, he also started a tax preparation company and developed the advisor-centric tax office system. As an early adopter of technology, he began a speaking tour called How to Run a Well-Diversified Financial Advisory Firm. Realizing how deeply technology would evolve into the financial planning industry's backbone for speed of business and marketing applications, as well as for compliance and security, he founded the United Cloud Partners Services. As a CEO of United Cloud Partners Services, which we're going to call the Tax Cloud. He operates one of the most comprehensive secure cloud technologies and marketing platforms in the United States. I'm very pleased to welcome tax management expert, Mr. Paul Dyer.
Hey, thank you very much for having me today. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, this is awesome, man. And now, Paul, tell our listeners your story about how you shifted from financial advisory services into tax management and what continues to intrigue you most about the industry in general.
Well, that's a story that could take up way more than the time we're going to have today. But, I started like a lot of financial advisors. I was interested in helping people grow their capital. And as a naive planner, just 19 years old when I began, I'd done a great job if I sent somebody off with a return of 6 or 7%. And we'd meet later and it's started to dawn on me over the first few years that they then go to their tax professional, and then what they actually ended up keeping in their bank account the following year was not 6 or 7%. So, you know, it really dawned on me early that it is more important to get a good rate of return that's tax efficient than it is to just get a rate of return. And so, although I practiced all those years, I just spent a lot of time and a lot of my interest went to the most tax efficient way to deliver what a financial advisor is supposed to deliver, which is return. So I started on that path and I grew my practice very successfully. And then as I met more advisors around the country, I started a speaking tour. I realized that my approach and my interest just wasn't common. 100 financial advisors you talk to in a meeting and say, who controls the tax return? And you'd get 5 or 6 hands. So I realized it was a void in our industry. And I started speaking to it, offering speaking to it and whatnot. And it's funny how life develops, but I ended up so interested in providing that service for advisors so they could provide that service to their clients that ultimately my financial planning practice became a secondary avenue for me. And as you've said, I've grown into probably one of the country's leading systems for training advisors on how to be tax smart, how to work with the CPAs, how to get that extra tax alpha for clients. And we haven't even scratched the surface. So many people just still don't do this.
So many. And I will echo that. You know, I've been using your system now for what, maybe 6 months. And we're doing these analyses for these professionals and we're finding just a tremendous amount of inefficiencies between the advisor and the accountant and the tax planning elements just by themselves. It is a fascinating area that is completely overlooked.
Well, and it's one of those areas where the standard answer if you have a broker and he doesn't know what to do, hasn't had any training, or his firm doesn't offer any training in that area, you'll hear advisors say, don't let the tax tail wag the dog. That's mm-hmm. their automatic reply to somebody when you start talking about the tax efficiency of their portfolios. And what I'd say to your listening audience is, if your broker ever says that to you, you need a new one.
Okay, well, you heard that from Paul. You know, I've been really looking at that for many, many years, and it is that area that is just the most unconfronted area of financial services is the tax area, because this is so darn complicated, and hard for the average person to really understand what's going on. You know.
Yep. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, okay. Well, we're going to be talking today about taxes. And, you know, I know you're going to have some great tips for our listeners today on how to easily reduce your tax bill and save thousands. Now, first, touch on why comparing one tax year to the next tax year is not the best planning tool.
Well, that's because the tax code is tremendously dynamic. And I think the public sees, oh, it's tax season again. It's the same forms. It's my W-2 comes or my 1099-R. And so people have become a little bit complacent to the fact that the tax preparation, tax season is just something that comes. And so like Christmas or Thanksgiving or any other season, you know, oh, I know what we're going to do. My uncle and aunt are going to come over and this or that. And then, you know, it's just all standard. Well, it's not. I mean, every year when the the president gets together and they start outlining annually the changes that are going to take place. There's sometimes hundreds of changes are going to take place to the tax code from year to year. The IRS, if you will, they run specials. They have yard sales. And so you just have to be paying attention to those things. A great example of this is 4 or 5 years ago when the energy crisis was kind of at a peak and gas was about $4 a gallon, they started allowing for a tax credit, which is better than a deduction because it's an offset of tax due, a tax credit for putting a heat pump in the ground. So I had a whole bunch of people come through tax planning sessions and whatnot, and they're like, you know, I'm saying, do you have anything that provides you with this tax credit? And this year, they're giving a credit for heat pumps. And a lot of people, of course, that hadn't heard of it and so on, they considered whether they were going to do that or not. The next year, the government canceled the heat pump credit and changed it to a windows credit. And it's this lagging indicator. A whole bunch of people came into our tax centers around the U.S. with heat pump receipts in their hand because they'd heard from a friend that heat pumps were deductible. Well, they were only deductible for the 1 year. So that expired. The next year, they did a heat pump thinking, well, now I'm going to get a tax credit. And voila, there was no credit for it. And we were asking, well, did you do windows or doors or roofs? So I don't know if the IRS does that on purpose. I won't be a cynic on your show, but a lot of people spent money and didn't get a tax credit because it is just that dynamic. Things change year after year after year. So you have to be working with somebody that's paying attention to what's new this year. That's that simple.
Tax policy has an absolute effect, economic effect on, you know, all commodities. It's just amazing to me how tax policy will affect that. Of course, they give credits to those things that they want to see get done. You know, that'd be the reason why to do it.
Right.
It's very important to stay in touch with those things. And I think that's the part with the tax code. I think if you look at professionals especially, you're so busy. Small business owners, you're busy working. Man, how in the world are you going to keep up with all these tax changes? That's just part of the challenge I think we have in this area. So, all right, Paul, we're gonna talk about two different areas today that I want to touch on. First of all, be the personal return, the 1040 that everybody has, and a couple strategies there. And then, of course, we want to dig into the business strategies, which I think is going to be the bigger piece of the pie. So, let's talk about certificates of deposit or different kinds of cash. What are your tax handlings for those?
Well, you know, in a lot of cases, people are concerned about leaving a certificate of deposit. They're searching for yield, and certainly those haven't developed any real yield in quite some time. So they're feeling locked in to their institutions because they've got an 18-month left on their CD or something of that nature. And so, you know, there's already the challenge that the chances are they're not getting enough yield to truly worry about what the penalty is. I mean, you're not talking about losing thousands of dollars. In most cases, you're losing tens of dollars or maybe hundreds. But then the other thing is that is a straight line item tax deduction on their actual 1040. So if they are thinking about leaving because they're pursuing a better yield and they're worried about what they're going to lose in penalty, they can turn right around and put that loss, that penalty, right on their 1040 and get some tax credit back from the IRS. So, you know, when you look at how small the yields are and then how small the penalty is for where they're at and then deducting that penalty and getting a tax deduction for it, there's almost no reason for anyone not to feel like that their fixed instruments aren't right now fluid. Now that might change as rate of returns ever get back to a 4 or 5 or 6% in the safe money category. But right now, anything FDIC insured is such a low yield that just feel like it's fluid. Yes, of course, the bank will tell you about their penalty. Their penalty is tax deductible. And between that and the yield itself, feel free to move it anywhere where you can find better yield and within your mind frame of what your safety requirements are.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. You know, one thing I want to clarify for all of you listening is what income tax is, because I think we kind of get confused about what it actually is, what a deduction actually is. Well, you know, realize that income tax is a surcharge on the dollar earned. So when you make a dollar, the IRS comes in and says, you owe us tax on that. Congratulations, you earned the dollar. Now, if you turn around and spend that dollar in a way that we approve, then we will not give you the surcharge on earning the dollar. And that dollar spent in a way the IRS likes is called a deduction. You're deducting the dollar in to the dollar out, no surcharge on tax. And so that's what we're talking about here, is how to keep the dollars you earned without the surcharge. So, Paul, let's talk about another one that really, I think, gets overlooked on the 1040, is this health savings account. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, HSAs and all of the different forms, there's quite a few different forms of them, but I was actually the first version of an HSA. I forget what the acronym was. It was different than HSA, but I was number 3 in the country. I happened to be in Washington, D.C., and at a meeting, and they just passed the bills, and I went home that afternoon, talked to a local vendor that was going to be involved in that industry, and said, as soon as these accounts are available, I want to open them, and I opened I think it was FSA at that time, but it was account number 3. So really believe in them, and obviously, in this case, it's a way of being pre-taxed on the actual contribution to the plan versus taking a tax deduction. So if somebody's in a 28% tax bracket or a 33% tax bracket, and a lot of working Americans with kids will find themselves in those brackets, they can contribute to that HSA or Flex Savings Plan, lots of different acronyms to go with this, but that before you've paid a tax medical account, and as long as that money comes out for a gigantic list of things to do with their health and well-being, then they will never pay tax. So way better than a tax deduction of a 10% or 15%. If I'm in a 28% bracket and I put $100 in my HSA, then I simply don't pay my 28% on that HSA. And then the only rule is, well, when you take that money out, you've got to spend it on medical bills, chiropractic, eyeglasses, dentistry. Most HSAs go well beyond a much broader palette than what health insurance covers. So they can be used in tandem with health insurance for those things that your health insurance doesn't usually cover, deductibles, co-payments, and up until just a little while ago, all the way down to simply over-the-counter medicine, but they've taken that one restriction back a couple of years ago now. At least has to be a prescription medication, can't be cough medicine anymore, that sort of thing. But they're a tremendous value. Almost everybody can do them, and that's one of those things. You only see one per 30 or 32 tax returns, one HSA for every 32 returns on average, and it should be almost 50-50.
Yeah, and that is a tremendous amount of lost deductions there, because you can do like almost $6,000, a little over $6,000 for a family in an HSA, and that can add up to some real money.
It's a big opportunity. And the other thing is HSAs, they're a category. They're a tax category rather than an actual investment. So people don't think of them this way, but you can actually have an HSA where after a certain accumulation of dollars in that HSA, if you haven't spent them on your health, you can invest them even in mutual funds. So you can turn your HSA into a quasi-IRA while you're funding an IRA, while you're funding a 401k, while you're funding something at work, and be funding your HSA, and that HSA builds up, and that's your money. And in retirement, you might have an HSA with $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 in it that you put in pre-tax on top of your IRA contributions.
Yeah, it's all good. It's all good. Well, it's time for weather and traffic update at this point, so we're going to go ahead and go to that break. But when we come back, we're going to continue to talk to our tax management expert, Mr. Paul Dyer. We're going to ask him more questions. Don't want to miss it.
Hi, this is Christopher Music, host of the Financial Power Hour and creator of the Private Practice Millionaire. I'm a veteran financial expert and best-selling author, and I'm also the founder of the subject of Econologics, which is a results-based financial planning system. After almost 20 years as a practicing financial advisor, I discovered that the missing ingredient in the prosperity of any household is the education and implementation of universally workable strategies. There are correct, time-tested laws that have always worked, and I want to share them with you. In 2014, I penned a chapter in the best-selling book with Steve Forbes of Forbes magazine called Successonomics. Learn the secrets of success in the new economy from today's leading entrepreneurs and professionals. My chapter summarized the process of how to define and locate your ideal financial advisor so you can achieve financial success. Download the book free at www.pchristophermusic.com. That's www.pchristophermusic.com.
This is the Financial Power Hour with Prosperity Coach Christopher Music. Make contact at 727-588-1540. And now, here's Christopher Music.
Well, hi, everyone. And this is Christopher, and I am the creator of the Private Practice Millionaire. So those of you who are professional practice owners, if you hadn't had a chance yet, go to www.privatepracticemillionaire.com and check out some of the information we have on there specifically designed for private practice owners. And we're here with our guest expert, Mr. Paul Dyer. And he's spending his time with us today talking about tax management and strategies to reduce taxes. So, Paul, let's talk about retirement plans, IRAs, things like that. What are the secrets to getting the most out of those?
Well, the biggest secret, I think, is just letting people understand that the acronym soup that we all live in, right? IRA, Individual Retirement Account, or SEP, Self-Employed Pension Plan. It all still, for the common person, means the same thing. So I speak about tax planning around the country. I always start out with what is a question for the audience. What is an IRA, a 403B, a 457 plan, a SEP, a KEO, and a defined benefit plan? What do they all have in common? And what's in common is that they're all simply an IRA, if you will. What's different about them is the rules of how much money you can contribute, and they all have certain industries that they touch. For instance, a 457 plan might be what you'd come across if you're a fireman and you're allowed to put money in an IRA. So don't listen to the acronym, just it's the thought. I'm going to put dollars away that are not going to be taxed. Like you said, the credit is going to be applied. The government is not going to take any of those earned dollars because you're putting them into a particular type of account. And then later in retirement, the concept is that you'll pull them out and have control of the taxation over them, if not the tax bracket, then at least in the timing. So again, you might be putting money away and avoiding a 33% tax now, and then you might say, well, geez, in retirement, I expect to still stay at the 33% tax bracket. So what good does that do me? Well, there's the power of compounding interest on interest inside a retirement account that even if all you do is put it away and avoid 33%, hold it for 20 years, and then pull that principal out and pay 33%, you're still going to have more money in your hand than if you didn't do it in an IRA. So it's a powerful tool, whether you save a lot of money in taxes or not. But if you wait until you're in retirement and you're in the 28% bracket or the 20% bracket, then there's substantial savings, and it's a chance to really grow your wealth by managing that piece of your life.
Right. And now let's get into the business side of it. Now, what kind of plans can we do on the business side? Why would a business want to have a retirement plan attached to it?
Well, there's lots of reasons that aren't just to do with the money, with the business. I mean, the way to keep a key employee, which matters more and more to a small business after they get up over a couple of employees, and retaining the people that they've trained and invested in, they're really making them into team members once they offer them some kind of business-based retirement plan. And the reason that most business owners don't necessarily immediately start one when they have the opportunity is just the discussion of, well, if I'm going to put money in this retirement plan, then I have to gift money of a certain amount to each of my employees to put in their plan. And those spreads and margins, they don't have to be ridiculously large. I mean, you could have a business owner that's contributing $10,000 or $15,000 for his own retirement, and depending on the age of the employees, he might be putting an additional $2,000 or $3,000 in that account for the privilege of putting the money that he wants to put in. And it's good faith. He's putting it in, and his retirees or his employees are saying, wow, he's investing in us. He's giving us money for our retirement. That makes them feel very connected to the company, and much less chance of turnover or them leaving for some reason. They feel like they have a home there if they have a retirement plan there.
Yeah. Now, how much could, what's the range of contributions that a business owner can make to these various plans that are available?
Well, that's the part that's mind blowing. And again, this is separates the men from the boys or the girls from the ladies, if you will, in the retirement planning groups. A lot of financial advisors only know the basics. They know a 401k or they know a SEP. But in actuality, the government has a lot of different programs that have been allowed for decades and have been around a long time that are defined benefit plans, but then there's defined contribution plans, and that's actually where we came from originally. If you worked for Ford Motor Company in the 40s and 50s, the idea was you're going to give us 30 years, and then we're going to give you a certain pension for the rest of your life. Well, what those were defined benefit plans. You weren't just getting a contribution and then good luck with what your balance is. I'm going to put in this much money. I'm going to put in this much time. And then Ford Motor Company is guaranteeing me $3,000 a month for life. And I cannot worry about the influx in income because it's a set thing. Well, those defined benefit plans that kind of went away with the idea of a 401k. Those are defined contribution plans where the employer only had to say, well, I'm going to put in $2,000, and if you grow it, good for you, but if you don't grow it, it's not my problem, and change that dynamic to that employer can still do a defined benefit plan for themselves. So especially in your smaller employee sets, if you've got a doctor and his wife and they've got one child and they all work in a practice together. I just did one on a veterinary clinic just a short time ago. Because it was all family members, they did a defined benefit plan. They guaranteed themselves a certain retirement income, and they were able to put away six figures in 1 year into their own retirement plan and avoid paying tax on over $100,000. It's legal. It's ethical. It works beautifully for them. So I'd say there's no limit on what an employer can put in a retirement plan. It's just what style are they going to use, defined contribution or defined benefit? And a lot of people ignore the defined benefit opportunities. They just don't understand them.
Right. And that's why I wanted you to say that. Now, did you all hear that? He said six figures of contribution. We're used to putting in maybe, $10,000, $15,000 a year range, or maybe, five to 20, whatever it is. But we're talking six figures a year, $100,000. If you're in the 40% combined federal and state tax brackets, that's $40,000 a year in savings that goes into your pocket only because you figured out how to put more money away to a time later in life where you have control over the income and the taxation at that point in time. So that's a very important strategy to look for when you're in this small business game, especially if you're making a lot of good income that you're not currently spending. So Paul, thanks for that.
And what's most important about that, Chris, is that the client, it isn't like new area. This is older than what they're doing now. 401ks have been around for 25 years. Defined benefit plans have been around for, almost 100. So yeah. It's very mature. It's real. It's not experimental. There isn't any surprises coming from the IRS about them. It's been around a long, long, long time.
Yeah, right. And again, very overlooked nowadays with the simple plans that are out there. Okay, well, let's switch gears here and talk a little bit about capital gains tax. Now, what's a good strategy for a business owner to think about when they accumulate assets and they're trying to sell them at a profit and avoid capital gains? What do you got for that?
Well, there's lots of ways to avoid a gain, but I always start off clients with simply saying, do you realize that the capital gains themselves, this is one of those IRS yard sales. They've been on sale for quite a while. The Bush tax cuts put in a reduced capital gain rate compared to what it had been. And so the first thing is to do a tax analysis of the item that you have that you want to sell and actually see first how big the capital gains tax is actually going to be. Sometimes you surprise a business owner with, because of the year you had, you invested in this equipment, you used a Section 79 deduction, you invested in an employee education program, which cleared out a little revenue that might have been profit. Now it's not because you invested in your employees. And now you want to sell this thing, and we've measured the capital gain, and you'll only pay 5%. And the answer in those circumstances is, let's not avoid it. Let's pay it. 5% is a bargain, right? But once we do the analysis and it does come back that they're going to pay 15% or 28% or 20%, then there's lots of strategies, again, legal, ethical, been around for decades, not new, not risky, not offshore, regular tried and true ways where if you want to do certain things, the government has a set of rules, and if you follow the rules, you avoid the capital gain. So one of those is what I call legal tax avoidance trusts. And this is, again, most of the Republican and the Democrats together, the one thing they can agree on is they're all attorneys, they've all written legal documents themselves, and they've all got assets in their own legal tax avoidance trust. It's one of the most common planning techniques done by the people that make our laws. So they're not going to be changed and be done away with later. It's common practice in our government that if you're an attorney and you're holding a seat in government, you've probably got one of these legal tax avoidance trusts you've had drafted for yourself. And it's simply a deal like this. I'm gonna paraphrase. These aren't the details, but you're going to put an asset in the trust, then you can sell it and pay no capital gain, no recapture, no tax at all immediately. Hold that asset, grow it in that trust for as long as you like, and then take income from that trust your entire life, your spouse's entire life. You can set it up so it goes to kids and grandkids. And at the end of the entire life of the document, you have to have calculated that it's likely that 10% of that, what you put in, is going to go to a nonprofit. So you're maybe avoiding 30 or 40% tax now, and you're selling something that you would have paid capital gain on. You're not paying any immediate capital gain. You're not paying recapture if it's real estate. You're holding on to that asset. You're growing it. You're drawing income from it your whole life. And then you're saying, well, for the tax deduction I got when I was 50, now I'm 91 and I've passed away. There's 10% left in that trust. That 10% is going to go to the Red Cross. So that's a legal tax avoidance trust. They come in lots of shapes and sizes, and they're very commonly used by the wealthy, but they're just as available for regular business owners. Regular people can use these documents just as well as the wealthy.
Absolutely. And these are these strategies that are very well known, very well vetted, that we just don't know about because I guess some of us are just more interested in learning about taxes than some of us are.
Right.
And Paul and I can kind of fit into that group. So, all right,
we're
folks.
Tax nerds. Admit it. We're
tax
nerds.
Tax nerds. We are. Yep. Absolutely. So, okay, folks, we're going to take a little break here. And up next, we're going to be wrapping up our interview with our rock star guest, Mr. Paul Dyer. And we're going to be figuring out more tips on how to reduce our tax bill. So you're not going to want to miss it. We'll be right back. Hi, this is Christopher Music, host of the Financial Power Hour and creator of the Private Practice Millionaire. I'm a veteran financial expert, best-selling author, and the founder of the subject of Econologics, which is a results-based financial planning system. After almost 20 years as a practicing financial advisor, I discovered that the missing ingredient in the prosperity of any household is the education and implementation of universally workable strategies. There are correct, time-tested laws that have always worked, and I want to share them them with you. In 2013, I penned a chapter in the best-selling book, More Better, The World's Leading Experts Reveal How to Get More Out of Business and Life with Better Results. This chapter, called The 10 Maxims of the Private Practice Millionaire, is a summary of the most important actions to take to ensure success in private practice. Download the book free at www.pchristophermusic.com. That's www.pchristophermusic.com.
Welcome back to the Financial Power Hour with Christopher Music, online at pchristophermusic.com.
Well, hey, everyone. Thanks for being here on the Financial Power Hour today. We have Paul Dyer with us, and we're talking about tax management and how to easily reduce taxes. Now, as a small business owner, you know, you have the option of using different kinds of business structures like S corporations, C corporations, things like that to move money. And there's ways to reduce some taxes. So, Paul, can you talk a little bit about a strategy that a business owner might use to be able to get some profits out at a lower tax rate?
Sure. Well, I mean, probably the least used of all the strategies that is overlooked and underappreciated, I guess is a better way to put it, is simply the use of a C corporation and often as a consulting firm to themselves. Now, I know that just sounds weird, and so you realize what the IRS does with tax code and law versus the way people feel, and I guess people have to get over the hurdle of the idea of wearing two hats. Right. So that's easy for somebody like you, Chris. You own a very successful financial planning firm and you own a tax firm. And so, you know, when you're wearing your tax hat, you're operating your tax company. And when you're wearing your financial planning hat, you're wearing your you're operating your financial planning company, even though you're the same person. Well, the business owner can do that themselves. In other words, I can be running a tire store. I can be a veterinary running a veterinary clinic. And at the same time, I can start a company where I'm going to consult to other tire stores or to other veterinary clinics, right? So I get good at what I do. I have things to share. I have information that's valuable. I've learned the hard way. I've rolled up my sleeves and I've made mistakes and I've paid for the mistakes and now I know not to make them again. And in any industry, somebody that's owned a business a while, they've got that knowledge. So they start a separate corporation and start offering consulting services, but their own first client is themselves. And it's not an illegal tax dodge. It's not gray area. It's very black and white. So I'm the owner of an S corporation. I've been organized under S, and I'm making now substantial profits. I finally figured out how to make my widgets and make money at them. Then all of a sudden I can say, well, you know what? I'm going to start a consulting business because I can now share how to make money with other businesses that do the same thing. And I'm going to do it as a C corporation, not an S corporation, because I don't want those profits to pass through to my personal tax return. My plan for the C corporation is to spend every penny it makes on deductible items. So it's not your whole revenue. It's not where you're going to take your substantial W-2 from. It's a side company. So your own S corporation, as a veterinary, as a tire store manager, whatever you've learned to do, you can then hire your own company and legally pay that company a consulting fee as long as you're offering those same services to anyone outside the industry. And it's actually a great way to pick up very generous additional revenue as a business owner. A lot of people might think, well, I really don't want to consult to somebody else in my area. I don't want to give somebody else my secret sauce. Well, you can make your own rule that you'd only consult to tire stores outside of your region or outside of your state or outside of, you know, you can not do it in New England or not do it in the Western United States. So there's nothing that says that you have to do it in your backyard, and you can charge phenomenal fees. Somebody calls you up, says, hey, I need a consultant. What do you charge? $1,000 an hour. Right? Whatever you can charge that someone says yes to, you can get. So that's the idea, is you set up a separate C corporation and then you hire yourself as a separate entity, and then that money can leave your S corporation. It can go out to that C corporation for the services provided that you've been providing anyway. You just hadn't formalized that it's a separate entity and a separate business.
Yeah, and the benefit is that if you know you're taking income as an S corporation, you may be at the higher tax brackets. What would be the benefit tax bracket wise with a C corporation?
Well, again, you're going to plan that C corporation is going to be a company that nets zero, not a nonprofit, but you're going to buy the things that you need to buy in that C corporation. That you're going to have an equal general ledger, right? Money in, money out is zero, or you could even have it make a little bit of money because there's tax favoring on the first $50,000 of income that a C corporation makes, and it's actually much lower than the average tax rate of an S corporation. So there is double taxation. You wouldn't want to accumulate $1 million in a C corporation. There's some things on the far end that are unattractive, but if you go into it with the right tax plan, which was the theme of your show today, is talking about planning your own outcome, then you plan. Okay, in that company, I'm going to buy equipment. I'm going to charge myself money. I'm going to purchase things. I'm going to spend that money. Or if I am going to keep revenue in that company, I'm going to keep it under $50,000 and pay an extremely favored tax rate on those dollars. Maybe I shift from paying 33% on my S corporation to only paying 15% in my C corporation on the exact same dollar.
Yeah, and that's a planning point, which is brings me to my next question. You know, everybody wants to know, where do you think tax rates are headed, and what should we do to be preparing for that?
Well, you know, I've been saying this so long now that some people say that, we've been hearing you say that for 7 years or 8 years, Paul, and so, you know, it's not come to pass yet. But if you look at the size of the federal deficit, and I think we're, $18 trillion now, it's not even the problem. The deficit is not the problem because it's dwarfed by the underfunding of the Social Security program and the underfunding of the Medicare program. When you add together the federal deficit and the unfunded liabilities of Social Security and Medicare, we're almost $50 trillion in debt. And that it's an unfathomable amount of money. So we've kicked this can down the road so far, so long, I just don't see how the country can't substantially increase taxes soon, because there's only two ways to get that bill cleaned up. And that's, as a politician, I can go out and cut programs. So I'm going to cut Social Security in half. Sorry, I know you were promised 2,000, you're only getting 1,000. And will I get reelected? Or I can say, I'm sorry, but taxes have to go up. And it's not my fault. This has been brewing for a while. So I think it's obvious. The bills come due. We're here. And at the same time, there's only two ways to fix the bill: cut the programs or increase the taxes. What politician is ever going to cut a program?
Yeah, exactly. And that, I think that's the point that really we have to confront as small business owners, is that our shoulders are going to be weighed down with a lot more liability unless we do something proactive and intelligent about handling our tax life. So, Paul, thank you so much for being here today, man. I really appreciate your time.
I'm very happy to provide it. I'd be itching to come back on the show again sometime in the future and talk some more. There's a lot that America needs to know, and that's the point. It's not complicated things. It's just new things to learn, but you have to be proactively asking. I want to plan my outcome. I want to plan my 1040. I want to know what it's going to look like in November before I file it in February, not just wait and see what it is, because you can do that.
Right.
In a business or personally, right. You can know what your taxes are going to look like before you go to the end of the year. And guess what? That gives you time to fix things.
Exactly.
So I just hope America will start doing that. And that's my mission.
Wonderful. Thanks a lot, Paul. And, you know, we have a tax second opinion service that we offer through my firm, Econologics Financial Advisors. Go to www.econologics.com or call us at 727-588-1000. 1540, and we'd be happy to do a tax return review and run it through a filter of 21 most overlooked tax deductions for professionals and small business owners to help you see if we can find some tax savings for you. So that's all we have time for today. Now it's time to really figure out how we're going to implement this material and make our future tax liabilities a little bit smaller so that we can enjoy a far better financial experience and quality of life. So I invite you to connect with me on social media. You can see or listen to older episodes of this show at www.financialpowerhour.com. Connect with me on Facebook, on LinkedIn. I'm everywhere. You can find me. So we will talk to you next time. I want you to have a great week. Enjoy your life. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Financial Power Hour. For more information on prosperity principles and how to apply them to your life and your business, visit Christopher's personal website at pchristophermusic.com or connect with him on Facebook at facebook.com/pchristophermusicauthor. You may also call Christopher's office at 727-588-1540 to request more information or arrange for him to be a guest speaker at your next event. That's 727-588-1540 or visit pchristophermusic.com.